I was thinking about today and the continuation. We're continuing through our essential Old Testament, but I was thinking about there's a radio. Well, it's a radio show slash. It's not really even a radio show. I think it's called a podcast. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. And it's called Serial. And I listened to the first two seasons. You know, it's kind of when I'm driving around and stuff. I you know, once in a while I listen to things. But it's got kind of an interesting twist to it. And what it talks about are the two seasons were each about two different criminal cases. One was military, the second one. And the first one was a case of a murder in Baltimore. And a guy named Adnan Syed was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend in 1999. And then they went back and kind of reinvestigated the thing. And you know what? The thing that made it an interesting story is there were some ambiguities. And it just kind of showed you how everybody involved is human beings. And it's hard to figure out exactly. And, of course, this story was mainly told from the defendant's point of view. And he and the other people didn't talk because he was already convicted. So it looked pretty good. Then you hear, you know, it kind of goes back and forth. It's one of those things. You can, if you really want to waste 10 hours, you can listen to it too. Reach your own conclusion. And the second one was about Bo Bergdahl and his situation. And he's been indicted and what's going to happen to him and kind of telling more of the story, way more than I knew before. And it was very interesting. And I think one of the things that draws you into these kind of stories is, you know, number one, somebody's life is on the line. But number two, there's something about, is it the girl that died in the first one, there needs to be justice for her murder. On the other hand, the guy that's accused, he needs to be treated justly in the accusation, in the trial, you want to punish somebody for killing her, but then is this the right person? That becomes the second question. And, you know, it's like there's a whole thing. Well, I just think this whole thought that draws us in about this craving in our hearts for justice and fairness is something that's there. And I think that's the reason a lot of these stories, like in the Bible, the one we're going to talk about today, it draws you in because there's this whole injustice level. Look, I remember one of the first things, I remember a kid that was a missionary's kid when we first moved to Spain in 1987. And he learned how to play. You know, he was playing with the kids down in the court at his apartment building. And he learned how to say, no vale. And no vale means it's not fair. It's not right. And then his mom said, so somebody, they were playing some game, and he goes, no vale. And the other kid punches him. So he's like, his mom said, you know, they were from like North Carolina, and his mom goes, he had to learn pretty quick that them's fighting words, you know. And so like, is that like, because everybody, like the one guy's like, that's not fair. The other guy, yes it is. And then they start throwing punches. And it's just something within us. Sometimes we feel like, oh man, this is just so unjust. And there's different levels of injustice. There's things that are just horrible and, you know, this murder, the guy that's going to be tried for murder, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's also, you know, the small injustices that we feel, you know, hey, I'm 15 years old and my parents won't buy me a smartphone. I mean, this life isn't fair. It's brutal out there. We have other injustices. Well, I only parked my car there for 10 minutes after the thing expired and they gave me a ticket. Come on. We have like different levels. We usually see it from our point of view of what's justice. So anyhow, we're going to talk about Joseph today. Here we go. There's Joseph. And just to kind of review where we are in case you weren't here, Jacob had 12 sons and, you don't need to memorize all their names. The key one was the 11th son, and his name was Joseph. And he was like Jacob's favorite. He was, you know, when Jacob saw Joseph, that's who he just loved. And all the other sons knew it. And they didn't like it. And he made Joseph this special coat of many colors that made him stand out. And Joseph, then, he had some dreams that seemed to indicate that everybody in the whole family would bow down to him at some point. And the brothers didn't really like it. And then one day, the brothers were up way away from home tending sheep. And so he went up to see about them. And they thought, this is the chance. So they were going to kill him. Then they decided, let's not kill him. Let's, one was just trying to save him. But they ended up selling him as a slave. And they took him down to Egypt. In Egypt, he is sold as a slave. He takes over the house of, he becomes a slave in Potiphar's house, who was the chief of the guard. And in Potiphar's house, everything he does goes really well. Pretty soon, he's in charge of the whole thing. And Potiphar says, look, you're completely in charge of this whole house. All I have to do is come in and eat and go out and do my job, and you run everything else. And then, meanwhile, Potiphar's wife, she kind of had eyes for Joseph, and so she starts making advances, and Joseph's like trying to give her the Heisman or pushing her off, you know. And then Joseph, finally one day, he's in the home by himself, she's in there by himself, she grabs him, and then he says, please lie with me. So then he's like, get away, and runs away, and she has his coat. And so then she takes with the coat as evidence. She says, he was trying to rape me. And her husband believes it and then throws him in jail. And so that's where we are right now. We could talk about the whole injustice of him being in jail, but he's still there. So Joseph, and now he is in jail. And so that's where we pick up the story. Oop, my sound effect was a little slow there. But anyhow, Genesis 40. And let's just pick this up here. Sometime after this, Joseph's in jail. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against the Lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. And so Joseph is in prison. And then these two, you know, I don't know that we normally associate cupbearer and baker as officers or kind of, but he's the head cupbearer. He's in, and what this means is the cupbearer is the guy, he's the food taster for the king. And so he eats it first or tastes it, and then if he's okay, then they pass it on to the king. So this is a position that's really important because a lot of the ways they would get rid of kings is poison them. And so he would, so this was a key job. And a lot of times there seems to be like a connection between the cupbearer and the king because they would see each other at every meal. They would basically eat together. That basically the cupbearer would give him his food and serve his food. And so they would get to know him. And if you remember the story of Nehemiah, which happened, you know, a long time after this, Nehemiah was the cupbearer for the king in Babylon, and he came in sad one day, and the king says, hey, what's up with you? Because he said you never would go into the king's presence sad. Well, so the king noticed it. Well, you know, my country's all torn up, and Jerusalem's a wreck, and I feel horrible about the whole thing. And so then they started talking, and then the king basically, well, look, I want to help you, Nehemiah. And so he sent him with letters to get the materials he needed and for permission to rebuild the whole thing. So there was a connection between those two guys. And I think it was kind of a thing where if you have somebody who's like canning your food and protecting you every single day, you get to know them. And you appreciate them. And it's a place of trust. And then the baker, he's also associated with the food. And so I'm not sure what happened here. Maybe some bad food got through. Whatever, the baker and the cupbearer, these are two guys associated with the king's food. Maybe burnt the biscuits. I don't know what he did. And you know, we don't really know. It doesn't really say, but they did something that got them thrown into prison. And they were in the prison where Joseph was located. And the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. So right before this, at the end of when Joseph had been accused by his wife and thrown into jail, it said that once he got into jail, again, he rose up to the ranks and he became the second in command in the jail. And so then they give these two high officials, okay, Joseph, you attend to them, you watch them, make sure they get what they need, but also keep an eye on them. So he's doing that. They continued in custody for some time. And then one night, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, and they were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. So, you know, sometimes you just wake up in the middle of the night. Have you ever had the dream where you wake up and you're like agitated and scared and shaking? I've had that one. You get all kinds of crazy dreams. I've had the dream where I was kind of floating around and flying. And, you know, I'm not really sure what that means, other than maybe my mattress was comfortable. I'm not really a dream interpreter. I'm not really one of those people that every day has a dream, write it down, think about it. What does this mean? You know, did that have something to do with what I ate for dinner? Or does it mean something about the future? I don't really know those things. But at this time, people took dreaming really seriously. Also, it's interesting, you know, to me, it's always amazing, like, how you dream things and just kind of random things happen. And you have a dream that's this and this, and somebody you haven't seen for a while, or somebody you don't recognize, but then later on they turn into somebody you recognize. And, you know, there's just, like, it just, like, I'm not sure what it means, honestly. So if you need interpretation of dreams, go to Joseph. Don't come to me, because I'm not going to be able to give you much help here. But I would say that they woke up and they, you know, they've had these dreams and they seem to have been a bit shaken. We can tell that from the next verse. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in the master's house, why are you your faces downcast today? Like, something's bothering them. What's bothering you? And they said to him, we have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. And so this was kind of like a whole, a whole profession was interpreting dreams, and they had ways to study, and this means this, and that means this, kind of like tarot cards or something like that. But Joseph is like, no, the interpretation belongs to God. And so tell me what the dream was. And he had this experience earlier when he had dreams, and they obviously meant something, and he seemed to have more or less a feel for it. And so then the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph, and he said this, and he said, in my dream, there was a vine before me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. So he says, okay. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into the Pharaoh's cup. Pressed them into the Pharaoh's cup. Here we go. Press that one. Let's go. One more. Here we go. He pressed them into Pharaoh in the cup and handed them into Pharaoh's hand. There we go. And then Joseph said to him, this is its interpretation. So here's what you had: a vine, three branches, grapes. You get the cup, you squeeze out the grapes. It was like we think of wine, it's more grape juice. Don't turn the grapes into Welch's grape juice, but they did this, and the Pharaoh apparently liked fresh grape juice. So, fresh squeezed juices are all really nice. You might check that out sometime. Then Joseph said to him, okay, this is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. So he says, okay, this is, there were the three vines, the three clusters of grapes. You squeezed them out. You gave them to the king. Now that means in 3 days, Pharaoh's going to come down here, take you out of prison, put you back to your old job, and you'll be back doing what you were. So like, wow, that's cool. And he says, only remember me when it is well with you. And please, do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. He's like, look, if okay, that's what's going to happen. You're going to be there in 3 days. Could you please remember me when you get there? And if you told the Pharaoh that about me, that really I didn't do anything. I got sold as a slave unjustly, and then I was put into jail unjustly. I haven't done anything to deserve being in here. Could you give me a hand when you get out? So now when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable to Joseph, he said to Joseph, so the chief baker's like, wow, cool. That's really great. Look at you. He had that dream, and it's very kind of similar to my dream. And look, it means he's going back, and he's going to be restored, and that's great. So, hey, can I hear mine? Would you do take a shot with mine? Joseph, okay. He says, I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head. Here we go. Here's his head. Here's the baskets. It was a very Egyptian-looking head. And he has these three baskets. And in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Okay, the birds coming in. Oh, wow. Look at that amazing animation. And Joseph answered and said, its interpretation is this. Okay, here this is a dream, right? He's right. He's got the head. We just showed you the picture. He has three baskets piled on top. The top basket has bread and donuts and stuff. And then birds came out and snatched it out of there. Okay, so what's that mean? Joseph said, its interpretation is three baskets are 3 days. Oh, good. I hear the guy, oh, this is good. It's just like the other one. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. One of the things is about the whole role of interpreting dreams. I would totally prefer to give the first guy the meaning of the dream, and the second guy go, I don't know. I have no idea what this means, you know. But one thing about Joseph, he's like telling the truth. That's one of the things about Joseph that like, whatever it is, he tells you the truth. He could have, there's a million ways he could have gotten out of this without having to say what it was, but he says, look, you want to know, this is what it's going to be. And really, his dream, the first guy's dream was, 3 days you're going to be restored. Your dream is, at that same time, basically the 3 days, you're going to be put to death. On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. So he hung. So the it was the some people use this as why they don't celebrate birthdays, because look, it was a birthday and somebody got killed. And on the other hand, somebody did get taken out of jail. So, I don't know. It was good and bad. But he says, look, one of the things that you can tell about God is speaking through Joseph is exactly what he said came to pass. It wasn't, in the law, it talks about the test for a prophet. Or the test, is this message that somebody's telling you, is this from God or is it not? And the biggest test is, does it come to pass? And the fact is, the way the test is not does this one incident come to pass, but do any of them not come to pass? Because God, you're not catching God by surprise. It wasn't like, oh, it's not just an accident that he just didn't just get lucky that, well, he picked the right one and picked the wrong one over here. He got nailed both of them. That wasn't just an accident. That's God showed him. The interpretation is of the Lord. So God revealed this to him, what was going to happen. And this is That's one of the big ways you tell. People say, sometimes I think that when a commandment about speaking in God's name, not using the Lord's name in vain, I think sometimes we associate that with cursing, swearing, using certain words that probably shouldn't be using. But I think a lot of it is also taking the Lord's, God told me that this is what you need to do. God told me this or that. I think that's like I'm speaking, that's taking the Lord's name in vain because maybe God really did tell you that. The way you'd know is, does that actually come to pass? And it's not something to be playing with, but Joseph wasn't playing with it. He was there. It was true. It's what he did. God gifted him in this, and he told the truth. And the cupbearer was restored, and the baker was hanged. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. And kind of our overall theme here is like justice or injustice, kind of like thinking injustice. You know how, to me, the situation Joseph finds himself in, he's there. Like I say, number one, his brothers had no reason to sell him as a slave other than their jealousy and their problems within them. Potiphar's wife got him thrown in jail unjustly. He's here in jail. He helps the one, he explains to the guy what it is, and the guy's really relieved. Oh, that means this. The other one comes true too, and he says, hey, could you remember me? In a certain sense, I'm sure it was, because it only happened 3 days ago. I'm sure that when Joseph was there, and the third day they come and they bring him, and this guy's restored, and this guy, he's put to death, like they said, but this guy, surely he's going to remember this. But he doesn't. I think sometimes I think the hardest injustices or sometimes things that are really hard to handle are, it looks like, you get your expectations going here, and then all of a sudden it's not going to happen. I remember picking somebody up at the airport. I forget who it was, and they were due at, and it was like a late flight, so it was like coming in at 10 o'clock at night, and they were flying from, I don't remember where, but we were picking them up, and they were flying in, and they get down right about over Daniel's house where he lives there on Hawthorne and First, and they write on the approach, and then they decide it's too foggy, go to L.A., get on a bus, and drive over. You're like, oh, that close. Oh, now we're going to, L.A.'s, it could be worse. They could go to Phoenix or something. But they got to go to L.A., get off the plane, get on a bus, and show up about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And by the time the whole thing happened, And it's like, oh. And I think that, to me, from Joseph's point of view, that's kind of what I feel like is like, okay, I'm here. Yeah, this wasn't fair that the brothers sold me. It wasn't fair that she got me thrown in jail. But here's a guy who is like friends with the king, who hands the king his food every single day, maybe three times a day, who tests the food, who's the king's right-hand man, who's right there. I'll help him. Now, surely, he's going to do something. And yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. It's like, so the time goes on, right? Joseph's still in jail. And that's kind of where we're going to leave the story for today. But I was kind of thinking about this whole thing about injustice and what happens. And like you say, sometimes the injustice is I wanted something and I didn't get it. I wanted a phone. I didn't get it. I wanted this new car. And I didn't get it. I want this. I wanted a promotion at work, and they gave it to somebody besides me, and now I'm upset about it, and that's just not right and fair. And I come up with five reasons why I think I should have deserved it, but they probably have some reasons why they think they deserve it. And whatever, it comes out. But then there's, like, major injustices. Like, people really, like, hate you because of nothing. People do things, like you say, there's little things that we can just kind of need to just ignore. And then there's big things that we have to really deal with. I've been talking to Karen, the girl, the woman that helps organize the kids that come here and clean during the week, and the one girl was murdered. But that's like, and that was like, she was nice. Like, why would anybody do this? What's going on? Why? It was just like horrible. And I mean, so there's things that are like, they're unjust and they're hard and there's no way to, like, how do you even deal with that? And there's people that treat you bad or do something. I mean, you know, like you say, I don't even know all the details, but I'm sure everybody here has faced minor irritations that they didn't think were fair. That's one thing. But then, you know, there's also major injustices and things that aren't fair and they're not right. And it's, and part of, like, how do you live with that? How do you deal with that? What do you do in your life, and how do you handle that? And I think we get a little bit of indication or some ideas, I think, that are pretty helpful from the New Testament. And I think of Joseph as like, and you want to talk about somebody who had it not fair, he totally had it not fair. But there's other people too. For what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. They were talking about Christians being punished. He's like, look, if you get punished, but you deserve it and you endure it, well, good. You know, that's good. But if you, when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. Now, if we have an opportunity to do right, we need to do it, but we can be the object of unjust actions. And then the question isn't, and maybe we have, Joseph was appealing, like, hey, you know what? You're going to talk to the king. Can you let him know that I don't deserve to be here, and can you get me out? He wasn't just like, well, I guess I'm going to be here the rest of my life, and there's nothing I can do about it, and I'm not going to say anything to anybody. No, if he had a chance, he's going to say things. If he's there, he's just working, doing the best he can. He's got a good report. He's doing everything he can do. But it still isn't fair, and it's not making it fair. It is what it is. And he says, but if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. See, the thing is, this is where God has to change you from the inside. I was talking to, I've talked this week a bunch of times to different people about my situation with my brother. And he has cancer, and he's doing chemotherapy. He started this week. He just finished his, you know, I talked to him yesterday, and he's like, well, 5 treatments down, 15 to go. And he's got, or he could go first week down, 3 more weeks to go. And he gets 2 weeks off between each set of treatments. So it's got a ways to go, but he did get through the first cycle. And I was talking to him about some different things, and he was getting like the situation with this other doctor and this, and he's starting to get kind of agitated about the whole thing. I'm like, look, if you need to do something about that, do it. But just getting yourself all worked up, that doesn't help you. I think sometimes, you know, yeah, there's something wrong here. And I think you need to do what you can do. Sometimes you can't really do a whole lot, but do what you can do. And then you know what? You got to say, well, God, you know what's going on here more than I do. You, sure, should I appeal? Absolutely. Should I pull on the door and see if it's going to open? Sure, why not? But ultimately, the problem is normal in all of our lives, with all kinds of whatever we perceive as things done unjustly to us. It really, the reality is that the enslavement is because of what's inside. The real chains that bind you aren't what somebody else puts on you, it's what you put on you inside you. I can't, you know, this, like you can go through something and you can understand, look, this isn't fair, it's not right, I don't think it's right, I'm never going to think it's right, but I know God is bigger than this. Or you can go, I'm my life is ruined and I'm never going to, you know. We read, when the chapel first started in 2004, we read a book by John Piper, and we kind of had as a study little group called Don't Waste Your Life. And then later, and it was talking about, it was mainly about people, especially like taking your life and like, what is your life about and what are you going to do with it? And he told the story about people who retired early, and then, you know, they were going to retire early in their 50s. And I know if you're real young, that doesn't seem that early, but if you're my age, that seems pretty early. And so they were going to retire, and then they were just going to go to the beach and collect shells for the rest of their life. And he goes, I think you got 30 more years, maybe. You're just going to waste it? Like, do something with it. Do something for God. And that was kind of the point of the book. It was like a whole book about that. And then he did a sermon in a prison, and it was called Don't Waste Your Life Sentence. And if you go visit Roger down at Donovan, and when he first went there, he was in the short-term prisoner section. And guys were in and out relatively quickly. And then he moved over to C or Charlie or 3 or whatever they call the yard. And that one is all, it's mostly people with long terms, like 20 years, 30 years, life sentence without parole, those kind of terms. So it's more like, and he said he likes it better because the people who are there, it's like if you're only there for a year, I can kind of just, it's not as serious of a thing. But if you're there for life without possibility of parole, you need to kind of start thinking about, well, what's your life going to be? Even if you don't think it was fair, what happened, how you got there, that's still, you have to deal with it. And it makes more of a long-term dealing with something. And I think sometimes there's these injustices that happen in our life, and part of it's like we just need to recognize, okay, wait a second, what's God doing through this? And how does he want to change me? And what is there in this situation that I can be thankful for? And I think that, this is continuing on in 1 Peter, for to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps. See, we go, well, this isn't, you know what? One of the biggest things about Christianity is it's not fair. It just absolutely is not fair. It's not fair that Jesus went to the cross and paid the price for your sins and my sins. That's just the totally most unfair thing that ever happened in the world. Now, we are the beneficiaries, as we trust in Christ, we're the beneficiaries of that. We're the ones who receive the benefit. So sometimes we kind of forget about how unfair that is to him. And whenever you think that Christ set this example for us to follow it. Joseph was an example of it. And yeah, he kept on keeping on, worked, did his thing. I'm sure he wasn't real happy that he never heard back. Like, hey, weren't you going to say something? Like, hey, I'm over here, yoo-hoo. But he just keeps going. And he says, look, Jesus, his whole thing was they took him and crucified him and killed him and buried him when he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, Joseph, we don't have a bunch of stuff he did wrong, but Joseph, he was a human being. And talking about Jesus, it says he committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. So here's the bottom line on this. Injustice will happen, and it will happen to you. It will happen to me. And sometimes there's mechanisms and things we can do to try to straighten things out, and sometimes we can, and that's fine. But sometimes we can't. And sometimes the whole thing ends and it just really wasn't fair. It really doesn't seem like it was fair at all. And then the question is, what do we do with it? How do we handle it? How do we deal with, well, this just isn't right? Well, you know what? I think what Jesus did here at the end, he didn't threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. I think that to recognize that one day things are going to be put right. One day there will be, everything's going to be squared up and put right. And one day there's somebody who's going to put it all in order. This gives us the peace that allows us to go, well, this wasn't fair, but you know what? It's going to be worked out. And it's not just, well, everybody's life is unfair to everybody. And they go, well, does that mean life is really fair? But it's not fair, unfair in the same way to everybody. But it is kind of true that's one thing we all have in common is we think stuff's not fair. And we think we're the brunt of it. We all think that. That's like something, that's a universal characteristic. By the way, I think that's really a totally a proof for God to just on, as a little a bunch of these groups are doing like apologetic stuff. But you know what? Where does that come from that we think there should be justice? If we're all just a bunch of chemicals, who cares? What is it? We're nothing. It doesn't feel like we're nothing. When you're on the wrong end of it, it sure feels like it's something. Anyhow, let's talk about this for a second, a couple of points here to close off. Final justice is assured. The just judge who will judge is God. And we're going to stand before him. Jesus, you know, instead of reviling, threatening, doing all, everything, you know, I mean, that's what they say. You know, he went like a lamb to the slaughter. He was the Lamb of God. And sometimes we have to do things. They're like, this isn't right. It's not fair. But well, what do I do? Lord, what do you want me to do? And how do I handle that this isn't so fair? Well, you know, final justice, God's going to take care of it. And that's part of what gives us hope in the day by day by day of things that aren't really right. Now I don't mean this in a sense of, well, hey, I realize, look, I've got the situation to make the judgment on some situation, and hey, life isn't fair, tough. No, that's not what this is saying. This is like I'm the recipient of it. God's going to work it out. Now, I need to be careful if I'm in a position where I have some authority, because you know what? Ultimately, I'm standing before God too. But final justice is assured. And sometimes life just isn't fair. It seems like it should be. It seems like it is, but there's this thing called sin that entered into the world and messed it all up. And we live in a broken society. We live in a broken world. We live in a world that you know, we for as much as we try, there's things, you know, some people have really an eye for pictures on the wall. And if they just get a little bit out of level, they just spot it. I am not one of those people, which I count as a blessing. But, you know, because you know what? You're never going to straighten every picture in the whole world. It's not going to happen. And you see it, and there's a sense, if you have this sense of justice and fairness, and you know what? Use it. But don't turn anything into an idol. Worship God. And if God's given you a gift to see fairness, unfairness, use it. But recognize it's a gift that's something God's given for you to use, not something that's going to control your whole life. Recognize that God is the one, and ultimately you're not going to straighten every picture. And ultimately, there's moments where you're just going to have to give it to God. Why did I get, you know, how come my brother and I were 1 year apart in age? Why, he's younger than I am. Why did he get cancer and I don't? I mean, I don't know, I'm not going to get it tomorrow, but right at this moment, right? Why is that? Why? How come? I don't know, there's a reason. I don't know. Why does this happen and not this happen? Why did, you know, I don't know. Sometimes life isn't fair. But there's an ultimate judge who controls everything. And we have to trust in him. So what do? The example is we look to Christ. That's who we look to. You want to handle things that aren't fair, aren't right, aren't just. No matter how bad your situation, in your life at some point or another, maybe it's not directly related to this thing and you're going, well, this doesn't have anything to do with that. Well, it doesn't, but you have sinned and you've done things wrong. I went for a long time without getting a speeding ticket. It went like, at one point, I'm on a new streak, which I hate even talking about this because it's just not good. I'm not superstitious or anything, but one time I did talk about this and I told somebody that I had gone 27 years without a speeding ticket. Then I called him up the next day and said, well, now I'm starting a new streak. Now, you know what? That doesn't mean that in those 27 years, I never deserved a speeding ticket. You know, can I just be honest with you guys? I might have hit 66 occasionally, okay? It might have happened. Okay, But you know what? I never got a speeding ticket for all that time. And so, you know what? That's like, great. But then, you know, when the guy, I was kind of coming down this hill a little bit over 65, and guy was sitting there with a radar gun, and boom, getting his car, pulls me over. it's not fair. He didn't give me a chance to say anything. He just goes, license and registration, please. Starts writing. But you know what? It was fair. It was right. I deserved it. On the other hand, some stuff happens and we don't deserve it. That's true. It's true. I'm not saying, well, just because. But it is also true that Jesus, when we put our life and our injustices in the perspective of Jesus, he did absolutely nothing wrong ever. He never sinned in his whole life. And he was put to death because of your sins and my sins. So if we want to talk about injustices, you know, that's why we look to Jesus. When you start thinking it's not fair, look to the cross. When you start thinking this isn't right, look, remember, God's going to work it all out at the end. Sometimes on the short term, it's not really fair. But if you want to see unfair and put whatever you've done in comparison to the biggest injustice of all time, just look to Jesus. Look to Jesus. Look, you and I are going to have to deal with difficulties, things that aren't fair, things that aren't right, things we don't like, things that, you know, some of them will work out that later on you'll go, you know, really this was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I hated it at the time. And some things you're going to go to your grave and go, that just wasn't right. But the question is, how much control is that going to have over you? Is that become some God that you have to worship that you didn't, it wasn't fair? Or are you going to say, well, you know what? There's a God. He's somehow allowed this to happen in my life. I don't know the answer of how that works or why, but I do trust that one day he's going to work it all out and make it me see that, you know what? There was a reason, there was a purpose. There was ultimate fairness here. God is just. We need to learn to trust him. Joseph kept on trusting God in the middle of one being sold by, look at being sold by your brothers as a slave. Like, come on, guys, are you serious about this? And they're, yeah, here's the money, here, take him. Like, what? Then the woman grabs at him and he gets thrown in jail. Now this guy helps him and he doesn't remember him. He's got plenty to complain about, but he just keeps doing what he does. And God's going to have situations come into your life that you think are completely unfair. And you need to learn to go, okay, God, you're in charge. You're in control. I give you this, and I trust you. I look to Jesus, who's my example, and who what he did was so unfair, but yet how you